building the fashion businesses of the future together. Welcome to the Future of Fashion Business. The Future of Fashion Business is about helping aspiring fashion entrepreneurs and designers start their own successful fashion brands by learning from the best, most experienced people in the industry. I am your host, Esteban Julian. For more advice and to learn more about how I started my own fashion brand, make sure you follow my fashion journey on YouTube at Esteban Julian. Hello and welcome to the Future of Fashion Business. I am your host, Esteban Julian. And on this week's episode, I have here with me today, Ace Rice. Now, Ace is the founder and creative director of the Plot brand, and he also was the creative director for Supra Footwear. Ace is a visionary marketing leader with 16 years of brand and product marketing experience. And this is not only across the fashion industry, but across a multiple different industries. It was fascinating for me to sit down with Ace and talk about his personal story, which varied a lot from sports to then music and then eventually into the fashion industry. He not only shared his incredible story with us, but he also taught us a lot about how to collaborate with other brands out there. As a fashion entrepreneur, if you're trying to grow your brand, it's very, very important for you to know who to collaborate with. Collaborations can be something that can really, really help your business or really, really damage it. So knowing who the right collaborator is and how to get in touch with them is extremely important. And we cannot thank Ace enough for sharing all of that information with us today. Let's get to the episode. And don't forget to follow our podcast to check out our future episodes.
So yeah, recording right now, but just to start off, Ace, because obviously I'm super, super stoked to have you here. I always like to have guests that are still very, very relevant to what the community, what millennials and what young kids are looking up to. So yeah, man, thanks for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure. My pleasure. Now to start off with, cause I'm guessing a lot of people, including myself, are very curious on what your story in the industry is like, what brought you obviously to the fashion industry, and just tell us a little bit more about what you do, who you are, and how you ended up where you ended up at.
Yeah. So again, thank you for having me. Man, I was born and raised in a small city called Minneapolis, Minnesota. And, I originally went to college for architectural design. So I've always had this kind of design creative element to what I wanted to do. But about 1 year into college, I had a chance meeting with Russell Simmons at a bookstore. And I asked him if I could work for Def Jam Records. And he said, well, at the time, he didn't even own Def Jam Records anymore, but he still had connections there. And he said, well, I can't get you a job, but I can get you some work on the street team. So essentially going around putting up posters when different albums come out, going to nightclubs, making sure the different DJs had the new latest and greatest singles and songs, and generally just promoting the records in my market. So I started on the street team, and kind of that was my entry into the marketing world. And as I started doing that, I realized that I kind of had an interest more into the sports side of it. So I wanted to do more sports marketing, and I ended up getting an internship with the Minnesota Wild, which is the NHL team here in Minnesota. And I worked with them for a year. And then I transferred over to the next year. I interned for the Minnesota Timberwolves, which is the NBA team here in Minnesota. And so that kind of got me down this track of thinking I wanted to be a sports marketer. And so one day, I was into the basketball season for the Timberwolves. I saw a Craigslist ad that asked for people that were looking to be in sports marketing. And I had no idea what company it was or what it was for, but I applied and I went for the interview, and it ended up being a brand ambassador interview for a role with Adidas. Mm-hmm. So the interview went well, and I went on and joined the Adidas team as a part-time brand ambassador, and really kind of got lucky in a way, because again, I had no idea what I was going for the interview for. I thought it was just something in the sports marketing field, and it ended up being more of an entryway and a gateway into the fashion and streetwear and sneaker game. And yeah, that was my start. So I started as a brand ambassador here in Minnesota, originally part-time, which means you go into different retail stores once a week or once every weekend. And you spend your time going in and helping sell through Adidas products. So at this time, Adidas, you know, this is about 15, 16 years ago, and Adidas wasn't as hot as it is now. So at the time, my job was to go and train salespeople, store managers, employees on how to sell Adidas products better. So teaching them all about the different technologies, all about the different materials, and helping them understand what shoes would be right for the right for each person that came into the store. Again, so that was kind of a part-time role. And I felt like at some point I had wanted to get out of Minnesota, and I moved to LA and I continued my work with Adidas. Once I got to LA, my role really expanded beyond the brand ambassador, and I went on to take on a bunch of special projects for Adidas, but really focused on direct-to-consumer marketing, a lot of retail support, a lot of retail training. I would set up the NBA store during All-Star Weekend for the NBA All-Star Game. Adidas sponsored that, so they had me go and set up the All-Star store and train the staff on how to sell the shoes. And then kind of from there, my role with Adidas just really expanded. And I spent 6 years with the company from Minnesota to Los Angeles. Eventually, they moved me to Miami, where I was a regional merchandising manager. So basically going into all the retail accounts, making sure the latest and freshest merchandise was out on display and the right signage was up and all the new campaigns were being activated in retail. So by then, you know, it was a full-time role, and spent 6 years again with the company, and that led me to a role with Sprayground, where I a really dynamic backpack company. I was the first head of marketing for the company, and then Coco and Breezy, the eyewear company, and kind of from then the ball was just rolling. And yeah, that was kind of how I got into the fashion game, if you will. Really kind of unexpected and just right place, right time.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. And from there, you went to start off something called the Pilot brand as well, right?
The Plot brand. Yeah, Plot brand. Plot brand is my own brand. Kind of my take on the streetwear brand. I thought not only was it a streetwear brand, but it was actually an art gallery also. So I owned it, operated an art gallery in Minneapolis, Minnesota for about 3 years under the same name, Plot. So really the merchandise and the fashion brand was really there to support kind of the art gallery business as a way. So not only did we have a physical location, but the great thing is, as you saw in the streets of Minneapolis, you'd always see people wearing these Plot hats or plotting shirts or plotting hats. And it really was a great extension of our gallery, really a great way to take what we were doing in the activation space, but make it really accessible and visible out in the real world. So that was kind of the genesis of the Plot brand. It was all designed by me and creative directed by me, and all the events and curated. I've curated about 35 different art shows over the course of the 3 years that I ran the gallery. And that was kind of the essence of what Plot.
Some huge artists as well, right?
Yeah. So I would work with, you know, did a really cool opening with Machine Gun Kelly, who's a hip hop artist, rock star, movie star. We did a photo exhibit with him. I worked with Mod Sun, who's a really cool musician, author, poet. He did a painting exhibit at my gallery, sold out of all 50 of his paintings in one day, which was amazing. And then again, some of the local talent that we have around town. We have a huge hip hop community here in Minneapolis. So work with Spooky Black and DJ Tip, Bobby Ratz, Alan Kingdom, those kind of guys that throw different events and curate different exhibits with those guys. And yeah, just kind of expand. But then also not only with like a huge like benefit of my business, and really part of the focus for us with Plot was really trying to be an entry point for young millennials and young artists to get into the art world. So we did a lot of art shows with, you know, artists you've never heard of and up-and-coming artists that actually had, this is their Plot, was the first time they had ever done an art show. So again, we partnered with a ton of people over the course of the years, and it was a great experience.
Love it. And did you start this whole project out before you went over to Supra, or after your experience?
Yeah, yep. So this was before I went to Supra. This is I opened Plot soon after I left Sprayground. I was living in New York, and I was working with Sprayground backpacks and Coco and Breezy eyewear, and then I just had this vision. I actually was a part of a recommendation from another streetwear brand called Accomplice. Mike, who's one of the owners of Accomplice, me and him were sitting down in New York, and he came to my house at one point that weekend, and he just saw what I was doing, what I was working on, and just kind of some of the creative vision that I had. He told me, he said, "Hey, man, he was actually hiring for a head of marketing for his company. But after we sat down, he told me that, yo, you don't need to work for me. You need to start your own company, man. He's like, you had, such a vision and you got your own things going on. It would be an injustice for me to go to his brand. He thought that I could kick off my own brand and push it. So it was really kind of under the recommendation from Mike, from Accomplice, was the one that asked me, told me, and I should start Plot. And so I started working on that from a concept standpoint when mm-hmm. I was living in New York. And then I moved back to Minnesota for about 3 years. And that's where I actually initially opened it. Started in Uptown Minneapolis, and then we grew out of that space. And the last location was just outside of downtown Minneapolis. We had a 3,000 square foot warehouse where we were selling clothes, making clothes, and then also doing exhibits and stuff as well.
Awesome. So was being, I guess starting your own thing, was it always part of what you wanted to do, or did it take Mike to tell you that you should start your own thing to you actually finding, the confidence and the motivation to actually start it out?
It really was kind of, Mike was really one of the big catalysts. I think one of my challenges for myself is I have always liked working with others. I love, I'm a self-motivated person, but also there's sometimes nothing else better than having a team of motivated people to work with, because they can sometimes push you further than you can even go, And so I really enjoy putting in the work. So previously I had always kind of worked for other people and other companies, but during my time working at Sprayground was great for me. But I thought that there was a lot of times and opportunities where me and maybe the other members of the staff didn't see the same direction as an approach. And so I always thought, well, that was kind of my beginning of thinking like, well, if I had a chance to do it, I would do it this way. And so I kind of started to develop the thoughts in the back of my head. And around that same time, I met with Mike, and Mike said he really pushed me. And then kind of my friends and family and the people around me all began all kind of suggesting and pushing it. And it really wasn't until I got to Minneapolis from New York, where an old high school friend was partnered with me, and he helped me. We partnered from a business standpoint, from a financial standpoint. And that also, sometimes that gives you more confidence to go ahead and do it when you have, not only your money to invest into it, but when other people are also willing to invest money to help your dreams come alive. It really did help give me the confidence to know that I was sitting on something special here, just from a thought leadership standpoint, and really getting out and doing cool, unique stuff.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome, man, because the reason I asked that was because most of the people in the fashion industry, they want to start their own things. It's always in the back of their minds. That's what happened to me. And that's what pretty much happens to everybody that I've met in the industry. And, they never get to that place where they're actually super, super confident on starting that thing. So yeah. I'm happy to mention that at the beginning, it was sort of an idea, but as you, again, continuously grew more confident, you finally had the courage to launch that product of yours.
Yeah. And I think what I've learned over the time of being a business owner is that, they say the old adage you hear is it takes seven failed businesses before the average, person creates a successful business. So to a point too, I just kind of wanted to start to fail fast so I could hurry up and get to my eighth business that was successful. So as much as I wanted my business to be financially successful, I also wanted it to be the opportunity for me to learn and start making those steps to educate myself on what it's like to be a business owner, what it takes to succeed in the business world. And then specifically in my industry, how do you kind of merge the business and the creative, which isn't really always a very easy task.
No, it isn't. And I'm very glad you mentioned that point, because it's a very common misconception that, creative people only focus on creative things when you start off in the industry. And although that sounds like the perfect pipe dream, to just start something off and just be in charge of the design, the image of the mm-hmm. brand, and that's it, right? But to actually balance things out with the business skills that are necessary is a completely different game. So
exactly.
What was your biggest lesson when it came to actually not only having a stronger design and creative background to actually implementing business skills? How was that experience for you?
Well, I think, I think there's no lesson like experience. And so my time at Adidas, we always would say learning by doing. And so I think it was definitely one of those learning by doing experiences. Again, me being on the creative side, not having gone to business school, there was a lot for me to learn. And I think probably one of the biggest areas of opportunity for me was pulling in the right people who were experts in their field. So I brought in a business manager, I brought in some legal counsel, and I brought in people that had a little more expertise in the area that could help support what I was doing and where my vision was. But if I could say probably, you know, my specifically to me, I'm just not really, I'm not a business guy by trade or by nature. So I think every aspect of learning how to set up a business, from tracking financials, those types of things were just kind of my biggest areas to learn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you just learn, you get your work hard hat on, and you just learn along the way.
Yeah, man. Really. Like I said, it was as much of an experience as it was for me to share with the world, it was equally an experience for me to share with myself to learn and go through the experience. So, yeah.
Love it. And how did you go around and to finance the whole project? Was it just something that you saved up for a long time, or you just gather a whole bunch of people to, you know, support you start this vision, or how did you start this whole thing out?
Well, yeah, I started the first round myself. Yeah, I just saved up some money from working, and I brought in one business partner, and my business partner actually happens to own a few McDonald's locally in town. So they had a little bit of expendable income to throw and invest in it. And actually the first location, I want to say we went into it with maybe 15 or 20 grand to actually open the business, make the apparel, make the hats, make the hoodies. So we did, we basically had an initial around to launch the business. And then also to renovate the location, our original art gallery location required a full renovation on one of the floors. It's a two-level art gallery. So we had to renovate the basement level to add to the more square footage for use. And so that was the biggest investment was up front, was on that end. But then once we got the business rolling, probably within another year of showing and proving, so that means within a year of us opening, getting my merchandise, getting my products out, getting people wearing my products, having my hats, probably the hats are probably one of the biggest things that took off for us. So everyone in Minneapolis and going out to the clubs, you go to the nightclubs in Minneapolis and you would see 3, 4, 5, 6 people all wearing the same hat. And so it started to be something really noticeable in the city of Minneapolis and St. Paul. And so people start to see, oh, this brand is doing something cool. I always see your hat. And I always get people that reach out to me and say, man, I was driving down the street. I saw this dude wearing your hat. I was driving down the street. I saw this kid wearing your shirt. And so that helped our brand recognition within the city. And then you layer that on top with all the activations, the art gallery openings and shows we were doing. We were generating a lot of traffic and a lot of buzz. For example, like the City Pages, which is a local newspaper in Minnesota, did a nice article about us. People were seeing what we were doing with the opening with Machine Gun Kelly and Mod Sun. So it started to generate a lot of buzz. So then once I had that level of buzz about a year into having the business, I took on another round of investors. When I brought in two more additional investors, we're able to, influx some capital into the business. But I kind of look at that again as like two different stages. There's the original stage where I had to invest my own money to get the ball rolling. And then once we generated the buzz and people had understanding what we were doing and I developed the reputation, I was able to go and then get some more money to help sustain the business.
Amazing. And you kept all of this within Minneapolis to begin with?
Yep. It's all Minneapolis. And it's funny because I've been back in LA for about 2.5 years, and now all my friends in LA are telling me, you know, trying to get me to move it to LA and open up a gallery in LA. And so I've been looking at some places around LA, just trying to put together a game plan and formulate exactly what it would take to finance a spot in LA. But yeah, this at my original location was all in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
No, I love that because, I mean, a lot of people, you know, the biggest objection that, you know, they tell themselves why they shouldn't do certain things is because, well, not all of them, in fact, most of the creative people are not based, you know, in London. They're not in LA. They're not in Milan. They're not in these places where, you know, starting in creative projects is easy, you know, supposedly easier.
Mm-hmm.
I love the fact that you started strictly on Minneapolis and you built your brand and your awareness of what you were doing within, you know, a local place.
Yeah. I think it's important to know your market as well. I think specifically to Minneapolis. It's a great market. We are considered the second largest theater market in America, just behind New York City. It's one of the biggest art markets. We have a huge art gallery and museum following here. So this is a very strong art market. So that's part of the reason why having an art gallery element to the brand made sense. But also being in the small market, I think the value and benefit for us, again, was being able to kind of corner the market. Again, I think if I would try to open my brand in LA or New York or something, maybe it's only, you know, one guy every couple times who go out sees the hats or sees the hoodies and sees the shirts. But because I was able to corner my market, it was to the point where the market saturation actually helped the brand sustain and gain credibility. So being in the smaller market actually worked well for us and really tried to, I think, kind of take the approach of, I say, like your local rappers, they always say, like, you gotta make sure everybody in your hometown, you know, has heard of you, who knows who you are first before you go and try and take on the world. So I kind of took that approach, more of a street team approach, really focusing on my local market and growing it from there.
Love it. And what were some of the biggest branding strategies that you started off with when you wanted to get people to know about your brand?
Man, honestly, I try to just stick to like a couple basic designs, and so that people would easily and quickly recognize when they saw my products. I didn't want to come to market with, I think initially I had, you know, 30, 40, 50, 60 different designs. But what actually I brought to market and what people gravitated towards was the same two or three designs. And so I decided to just focus on that. And so once people would see the hats or the shirts, it was really quick and easy for them to recognize, as opposed to me coming out with 20 or 30 designs, which then I think makes it very difficult for people to recognize that it's all coming from the same brand. So from a product strategy, that was my kind of main focus. And then again, from the activation strategy, because again, to me, there's something about a brand that when it lives outside of just the apparel or just the garment, that helps it come to life. And so again, the activation for gallery was a huge point for us in our brand strategy for us. So that really helped people gravitate to our brand because they're saying, oh, wow, Machine Gun Kelly is doing something here. Oh, my son's doing something here. Oh, Bobby Rath is doing something here. And it helped people get a better understanding of the type of people that we like to have our brands associated with. So I think those are the kind of the two key strategies from a branding standpoint for us at Plat.
Awesome. Yeah. So it sort of enhances your brand story in a way.
Exactly.
And now, we'd like to take a quick commercial break to thank our sponsors. This podcast is sponsored by Your Social Component. At Your Social Component, we help fashion and e-commerce business owners automate and scale their online sales using the best online advertising strategies out there. If you're looking for a marketing agency that completely understands your industry and can scale your fashion and e-commerce business to the next level, make sure you get in touch through our website at yoursocialcomponent.com.
Now let's continue with this week's episode. And if you had to go back, because obviously when you started this thing 6-7 years ago, you know, social media, which is now one of the biggest factors in the industry right now, wasn't really something that you looked for when it came to, you know, pushing or starting a brand.
Right.
So if you had to start the brand right now, what would be the biggest branding strategy that you recommend somebody to focus on? And I know this might be a very general question.
Yeah.
But, you know, based on everything that you learned in the past 6 years, everything that you've learned from seeing what's happening on social media, if you were starting right now, what would be the first thing that you would focus on when it comes to branding a product and making people actually like that brand and hear
about? Yeah, well, I think in my experience, and we're kind of in the process, like I said, I've been looking at some locations in Los Angeles, so still kind of working through a potential relaunch of the brand. But if I had to go back, I think one of the areas I've noticed is in this new generation, new times of the internet and Google search and Google image search, that I think a lot of the original ideas or the idea or an original idea has been lost. And I think that a lot of the things that we see have just been kind of either regurgitated, copied out of Google image search or or some social media regurgitation of a product that we've already seen. So we see it all the time with a really cool brand or a really cool product. As soon as a product kind of catches a wave, you'll notice about 10 or 15 other brands selling a knockoff version of the same thing. So even you see this a lot on Instagram, if a certain type of hoodie is popular, you'll start to be served ads from other brands that sell knockoff or generic versions of the same thing. And so for me, my focus would be to relaunch, would be really trying to highlight the original art aspect of what I'm bringing to the table. So specifically for me, my brand, we did a lot of design work, graphic designs, but I think our graphic designs were almost so cool or so almost iconic in a way that I think a lot of people thought that the images were maybe grabbed from online, or that the image of something was like not generated from myself. So now I'm going back and actually painting with acrylic paint on large canvases a lot of my designs. So if I had to relaunch now, basically what I would say is I would focus on actually doing the painting of my designs first, getting those out and helping people understand that this is kind of original ideas from within my head, and then turning them into graphics and then selling the graphics. So in essence, if you can't afford this $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, or $5,000 painting, you can take the original art and still have it as a wearable piece as a t-shirt. So if that makes sense. So then you can buy the $30, $40 t-shirt if you can't, you know, support by buying the painting. So I've actually been spending a lot of time recently going back in and painting in hopes of relaunching the brand and that seeing some of my paintings going straight to merchandise.
Mm-hmm. Did that make sense? Man. Yeah, perfect. It made perfect sense. It was definitely not something I had ever thought about, obviously, because I don't have a gallery or anything like that, but it makes total sense. It makes total sense.
Yeah, well, I knew I had a problem when I had this really like well-known Martin Luther King graphic that I created, and it was originally from original photo, and I photoshopped and turned into this like cartoon illustration, and I added a crown to his head and a whole bunch of stuff, and then my mom bought the hat and the shirt, and she and my mom bought the hat from me and the shirt from me, and even my mom, she said, you know, she asked me, oh, so where did you get this image from? And I kind of knew at that point I had a problem that like people aren't realizing that I'm actually creating this stuff kind of from scratch or from my own variation of it. And so that's kind of an effort to combat that. And I think that will help elevate the products that I'm bringing to the table.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Love it. Mm-hmm. Love it. Love it. Now I want to touch base on something that I know you are quite experienced at, and I know for sure you had a lot of this experience when you were working at Supra, and mm-hmm. that is collaborations, because you see collaborations being not only used all the time nowadays, but being increasingly important when it comes to brand development and obviously your brand through different channels.
Yep.
Because this is something that can be obviously very specific, and I've found that there's barely any information about that, but how do you know which brands are the right ones to collaborate for your product? And is it actually something that you should be looking into when you're starting out a new brand?
Yeah. Well, I think first thing you have to do is understand your brand, understand who your current target consumer, or who your current consumer is, and understand who your mm-hmm. target consumer is. And so really those are the main things that I use to help qualify another brand for a collaboration or a specific artist for a collaboration. So really honing in on who's the target audience and who I'm trying to attract to my brand. So I think collaborations are incredibly important. I think the right collaborations are more important. I think the wrong collaborations can potentially even do more detriment to your business than the right collaboration. So I think it's incredibly important that you be thoughtful about who you collaborate, and that collaboration really brings an added value to your business. So what we like to say is with a collaboration, it should feel like 1 + 1 = 3. If it just feels like 1 + 1 = 1.5, or 1 + 1 = 2, then maybe that's not that exciting or that great of a collaboration for your business. But it's something special about when you put two brands together, and then now it feels like so much more. And so obviously with Supra, we partnered with a bunch of people that a few brands, a few artists as well, that we thought really brought that to life. So again, I was able to partner with Modson on a collaboration with Supra. I brought him in to design some sneakers with some of his original artwork. We have a collaboration coming with Xavier Wolf, who's an artist, music artist out of Memphis, Tennessee. And then, you know, last year collaborating with Activision for a Call of Duty launch and Skullcandy, where those were all really great examples of collaborations. We thought that we were able to take it beyond just two brands coming together, and we were able to make it much, much bigger play, or both brands are bigger than any one brand individually.
Awesome. And is collaboration something that people should look into doing when they're starting out, or should they wait until they have a solid brand and brand identity to do it?
Well, yeah, I think without a solid brand and a solid brand identity, you're going to be kind of wasting your time. You know, it could be a collaboration that works out in your favor, but if you don't have your brand identity and your core and target audience dialed in, then there's probably 9 times out of 10 it's going to be a lot of work for not a lot of benefit.
Awesome. And that's why it's so important to have your fair sales in, right? Because it's those first sales that at the end of the day are going to tell you a lot about who your customer is and a lot about what your brand actually looks like and is. Because I mean, you might, you know, us creative people get lost in you know, the love story of what our brand, we want our brand to stand for. But when we get the marketplace to give us their opinions and give us what they feel our brand represents, it's a completely different story. And it's something that you have to adapt to.
Exactly. I think, man, being a creative is one of the, you know, blessings that the universe has given us. But when it comes to business, being a creative needs to be partnered with some strategy. So I think if you're being a creative just for the sake of being a creative, because that's what's in your heart, and you can do whatever the heck you want. But if you're actually looking to drive some business and some revenue, you need to match and marry that creative with some type of strategy to make sure that your creative is actually executing to the strategy that your business needs.
Love it. And as you said, developing that only comes with experience, right? Like it won't help if you just sit down and, yeah, you can start reading some books and that definitely is going to help. But at the end of the day, it doesn't really start happening for you until you actually go out there and do it and work on those skills.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. Like I said, I think it's a learning by doing. I love, you know, I think college education is incredibly important. I think the base skills that you get, some of the key base skills that a lot of people get while in college is learning how to learn, learning how to teach yourself how to learn. So I think college is incredibly important, but I will always take someone who was out in the field actually doing it and learning and taking the lumps and taking the winnings and taking the losses and learning from those losses over someone who is reading about someone else's wins and losses.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
If that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. Love it, Ace. Now, I'm gonna go back a little bit because there was this one question that came up to my mind that I really wanted to ask you. And that is, what would, if somebody listening out there is looking for potential collaborators, what's the first step to actually get in touch with them? You know, because when you're starting out, you have no idea. You don't even know who to get in touch with. So what's the best way to reach out to potential collaborators, and who should you even reach out to, you know?
Yeah, well, I think one of the best ways is by putting yourself in front of the people. So I would recommend going to trade shows, whether it's used to be Agenda, ComplexCon, Liberty, Envision, Magic, all of those types of things. Those are great ways to actually get in front of an official rep for the brand. So whether it's a sales rep, sometimes and oftentimes a marketing rep will be there. But that's a great way to just get some face time. And that way you can actually introduce yourself to someone who's actually officially with the company. And they can usually be that right liaison to point you in the right direction. If they're not the person whose job it is, 9 times out of 10, they will gladly point you to the person whose job it is to do that. So I would recommend going out to trade shows and bread and butter. Those types of things are great ways to get some face time and figure out who that right contact is. You know, you can always kind of go the more a cold call approach, which is what I would say LinkedIn is, a little bit more of a cold call. But I think your success rate is going to be much lower. And then I would say probably a third option I would say would be going to the retail or going to the shop of whoever you want to collaborate with. You know, if they have their own retail, show up, ask for the manager, ask for the store owner, whoever it is, and just introduce yourself directly. And I think if you have a goal that has a collaboration with a certain type of brand that might be lofty in the moment, meaning you don't have access to, let's say you want to collaborate with Supreme or you want to collaborate with Palace, some of those really cool hip streetwear brands that seem to be on fire right now. I think there's other brands that you can collaborate with on your way to getting there. So start by looking at some of the smaller brands that you can collaborate that would help get the attention and put yourself on the radar of a Supreme. So going and finding a brand that may be doing cooler stuff, like a skate brand in downtown LA called Brotherhood. So they're kind of up and coming. So maybe it's someone you can collaborate with that will help you get on the radar of a Supreme, or collaborating with a Brooklyn Project, which is a store in LA that sells like a bunch of the top streetwear brands. So doing those type of small collaborations may help put yourself on the radar of some of the bigger brands. And then also it helps give yourself a track record of support and sales and success that you can go and take to another bigger brand that you want to collaborate with. Because no matter how amazing your ideas are, without a track record of success, most brands won't take the conversation much further in regards to collaboration. Because ideally, 9 times out of 10, if a brand is going to collaborate with you, they're hoping that you're going to sell all the product. And just like if we collaborate with another brand, we're hoping that the heat from that brand will sell through all the products. So it's really got to be a balanced relationship. And I would be cautious to try and engage a brand that you don't have the same value or ability to sell through product with, because the worst thing that could happen is to burn a bridge or ruin a relationship because you want to do a collaboration with somebody, you do the collaboration, you guys go make 1,000 pieces, and then you have 800 pieces sitting in your warehouse, and now that brand's wondering why you guys didn't sell any, because they bought into your dream, but you don't have the sales record to prove it, and now you guys are just sitting on a bunch of product. So then again, that would kind of burn the bridge. So it's important to pace yourself and grow into the type of collaborations you want to be with.
Love it. Love it. Yeah. So take your time, be patient, start working with brands that are sort of at your same level at the moment. And once you get some track record, once you prove you can actually, make some sales and that your brand is something that people want, you can start branching out to people that, a little bit more up there in the industry.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome, man. Well, Ace, it's been an awesome episode, to be honest with you. It's something that I've always been very, very curious about. I have my own fashion brand as well, but I've never had any firsthand experience with collaborations specifically. Yeah. So thank you enough for sharing that with us. Now,
of course.
Before we conclude this episode, yeah, I always like to ask my guests one final question. And that question is, if you could go back in time, sit down with your, 15, 16, 17 year old self, whatever age you want, what would be the best piece of advice that you'd give yourself?
Man, that's a really, really good question. Gotta try not to internalize that one too much, but
we can edit out the silence, bro. We can edit out the silence. Don't worry about that.
I think if I had to go back and sit down with my 15 or 16 year old self now, I would just say, have the confidence in yourself to start, and to understand that failure is a part of the process, but believing in yourself is all that you really got. So if I had to go back and tell myself anything, it would be understand that failure is not the end, and that believing in yourself is really where it starts. So go ahead and go get to it, man.
Love it. Love it. But yeah, because it's definitely something that we all struggle with. And I think that in particular is something that we all wish we learned sooner, because we always have those periods of self-doubt where we just wish we started things easy, earlier on. And yeah, I think it's a perfect, perfect point, and something that I would definitely recommend to my own self if I had to go back.
That's right, man.
That being said, Ace, I really want to thank you for not only your time, but also all the valuable information that you share here with us. Really happy to learn about how your brand's going. Hopefully that LA expansion works out. And I also hope we can have you here some other time in the future, man. Would be a pleasure.
Definitely, man. Anytime. I appreciate you guys working on it. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and I'll keep you posted on the LA updates.
Nice. Thanks, man.
Awesome, man. All right, talk soon.
If you want to learn even more about how you can start your own fashion brand, make sure you follow me on YouTube at Esteban Julian. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Future of Fashion Business. Make sure you subscribe to listen to our future episodes.